Good morning, and thank you for joining me on the Path to Liberty. I'm Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, and this is the show for Monday, October 24th, 2022. I hope you had an awesome weekend, and I appreciate you spending some time with me to start out your week. And today, I'm talking a bit about sleep, but not the awesome, healthy kind. I know we've all heard the phrase, wake up. People have always telling us how someone's got to wake up about what's going on, about the power of government, about liberty. But the founders used actually a pretty similar phrase and approach and warned us that sleep would lead to despotism and tyranny. So on this episode, I've got a bunch of original source documents, plus a handful of people I rarely, if ever, quote, like Benjamin Rush, Arthur Lee, Stephen Hopkins especially, plus a bunch of other people that you're already aware of, Samuel Adams, James Otis, and others, and I think that will tell a pretty interesting story. But first of all, before getting to that, a quick hello and a huge thank you. Thank you so much for being here, whether this is your first episode or you've been here for every single one since day one. I hope you had a great weekend again, and thank you so much for being here. While we allow people another moment or so to get notifications to join us on the live stream, let's say hi to everyone out in the live chat, or I'll scroll through and see how many people I can catch. There's Bonehead, Gun Eye in Missouri, Dixie Strong in Bama, White Bearded New, Dave Simmons, Clay Kent, Tim Martin, Lawrence Smith, Haji, Tom Norman in Ohio, Ren, Ohio, Brian in Georgia, everyone else. I really appreciate you being here. If you want to follow along with the original source documents, the stuff that I'm mentioning in this episode, you do have to follow us over at our show homepage, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. It's all spelled out, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. You'll find all the archives of the show there, all the different platforms we're on. In case, you know, you're on one of these mainstream ones and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, one day we're gone, it's probably going to happen at some point. So you want to know where else you can find us. We don't just stream on Facebook and YouTube, but we're also archiving the video all over the place, from Gab and Rumble and Brighteon and BitChute, everywhere that we can possible. And if you've got some suggestions, I do want to hear where you'd like to see us. Of course, we have the audio-only podcast edition, and I publish a blog post for every single episode about 1 to 2 hours after the live stream is done. Anyways, enough of me rambling. Thanks for being here. Let's start out with someone that I don't think I've ever quoted, but someone that I think we should cover a little bit more, a guy named Stephen Hopkins. And here he is in the Rights of the Colonies Examined. This was written in 1764. He was the governor of Rhode Island at the time, so he was kind of on, you'd think he'd be on the royal team. But eventually he signed the Declaration of Independence, he helped write the Articles of Confederation, and he wrote this particular pamphlet with the approval of the Rhode Island legislature. These were radicals back then. It's not the Rhode Island of today. It actually captures, I think, a very common view of Americans at the time, especially when we're talking about the time leading up to the Stamp Act. Let's check this out. He starts it out with liberty, well, pretty close to the top. Liberty is the greatest blessing that men enjoy. Liberty is number one. So if you've heard me talk about Patrick Henry at the Virginia Ratifying Convention, I know I have to get back into my episodes covering his speeches there, but he talks about liberty being the primary object during the Revolution, and he thought that there were more goals later on that were different from liberty. But he often cited this, and you can see this very often in the writings in the 1760s and 1770s. The number one thing they talk about is liberty. And here's, well, maybe I haven't counted, but it sure seems like that. Stephen Hopkins, liberty is the greatest blessing that men enjoy, and slavery, the heaviest curse that human nature is capable of. He said, those who are governed at the will of another, and of course I'm skipping around, so you'll want to follow, if you want to read this in context, 10thamendmentcenter.com/path to liberty. In a couple hours, I'll get that linked over there. Those who are governed at the will of another. Think about this. Someone who has to do stuff based on what another person tells them. This is an ANCAP, but it has a little bit of that kind of precursor feel to it. Those who are governed at the will of another or of others, and whose property may be taken from them by taxes or otherwise without their own consent and against their will, are in the miserable condition of slaves. The founding generation, well, the old revolutionaries often looked at someone who basically owned your property, the fruits of your labor, as a slave owner. So this is a really, really common view. They based a lot of this on property rights. And here's Stephen again. He said, "For it must be confessed by all men that they who are taxed at pleasure by others cannot possibly have any property. So if they can take part of it, you really don't own it. And a lot of people will tell me this when they talk about property taxes and the like. They can have nothing to be called their own. Hopkins continues, they who have no property can have no freedom. They saw property rights as the foundation of all the rest. I'll get to that in just a moment. I know I've done an episode covering that in more detail, but we'll get to that just briefly. They who have no property can have no freedom, but are indeed reduced to the most abject slavery, and are in a condition far worse than countries conquered and made tributary. So Stephen Hopkins makes the case that if an empire conquers another country and makes them give like a yearly tribute or something like that, at least you can just figure out what that's going to be. That's bad in and of itself. It is theft and robbery and all kinds of bad stuff. But people who can change that around and increase and reduce whatever, well, reduce doesn't ever seem to happen, but change it up at a whim on their own will, that's even worse. Now, again, to property rights, here's Arthur Lee, who I have so many quotes that are very similar to this from John Jay, Samuel Adams, so many others. The right of property is the guardian of every other right. And to deprive a people of this is, in fact, to deprive them of their liberty. So the foundation is property rights. James Otis Jr., who we know in 1761, his arguments against the writs of assistance could be called the beginning of the controversy against the colonies and Great Britain. Here's how he put it. This is in the Rights of the British Colonies, asserted and proved, 1763-64. No man can... This is really early stuff. We don't even hear stuff like this today. No man can take my property from me without my consent. If he does, he deprives me of my liberty and makes me a slave. This is the same guy who said all human beings, white, black, whatever, are by nature born free. So this is, he's not on that team. And it's not just taxation, of course. It's not just about what money they can steal from you. It's about arbitrary power. And arbitrary power was one of the grievances specifically listed in the Declaration of Independence. The founding generation, the old revolutionaries especially, considered a government that could change the rules based on what it needs on the political climate of the time. That was the very definition of a tyranny. That was the definition of a despotism. That's also the definition today of a so-called living, breathing constitution. They want us to believe the people who love the monster state and want to see it keep growing and doing whatever. They hate the founding generation. They will vilify them every chance they get. And of course, they want us to believe that a legal document, the meaning of a legal document, changes over the time. But if they were, let's say, a property owner and they had a legal agreement with a tenant, they would not want the tenant to be able to change it over time based on whatever they wanted. Anyways, hear from a writer called The Tribune. This one's actually new to me. I'd only read it first time over this weekend, published in the South Carolina Gazette in October of 1766. I thought this was an interesting kind of overview of this this position that arbitrary power is tyranny. And the Tribune writes, when ministers dare not only to talk, but also to act arbitrarily in a free state, and no matter in what mode, so as even to invert the very nature of constitutional institutions. They often talked about the Constitution. Of course, this is the unwritten British Constitution, but they understood that government had certain rules and limits. It's unfortunate for them that it was all gray area. Unfortunate for us that we, the people, for generations have turned it all into gray area when it's all very fixed and very defined. But anyway, so when they invert the nature of constitutional institutions in defiance of an inherent right in the people to call him to a strict account for so doing, what then do they become but slaves to the will of a prince or a minister, though in a mode that perhaps may be peculiar? So it's not the same type of slavery as chattel slavery. And he's saying here, or she, the Tribune is saying here, but surely the mere varying of forms cannot be said to alter the essence of things. Again, that's the Tribune, South Carolina Gazette, October 1766. This was, of course, in the time of the Stamp Act and the precursor, of course, to the Townshend Acts of 1767. Here's John Tucker. I think I've covered him briefly before. This is an Election Day sermon in 1771. You don't hear this on voting days. To suppose otherwise, and that without a delegated power and constitutional right, rulers may make laws and appoint officers for their execution and force them to effect according to their own arbitrary will and pleasure, is to defeat the great design of civil government and utterly to abolish it. So as long as you have people who do stuff based on what they want to do rather than the limits given to them, then you have abolished the entire system. Now, when you get down to it, and I'll cover this a little bit further near the end of the show, but it's really, I don't think we should ever be surprised that people with power are always going to break the rules. Rules on paper don't enforce themselves. Words on paper never did, never will. It is up to something else to do that job. Anyways, Tucker goes further. He said, doing this, giving them arbitrary power or allowing them arbitrary power, is to make rulers absolutely despotic and to subject the people to a state of slavery. They really did not hold back on that term at all, because it will then be in the power of rulers, by virtue of new laws and regulations they shall please to make, to subvert and annihilate the present Constitution, again, the unwritten Constitution even, and to strip the subject of every kind of privilege. People with power, when you allow them to do whatever the hell they want, they will destroy liberty over time in every single area. Today, we live under the largest government in the history of the world. We could have said that 20 years ago. And now 20 years ago, it looks like it was a small government in comparison. 20 years from now, 100 years from now, unless the people change how they deal with this and how they approach and love or hate liberty, unfortunately, most of it is hate, that is going to keep getting worse. Anyways, Tucker goes further. This is, again, his sermon of 1771. If by such usurped authority, again, usurpation of power is theft of power from the sovereign people. If the people hold final authority and government is only supposed to be there as an agent delegated to do stuff on behalf of the people, then anytime the government does stuff beyond its limits, it's stealing, it's usurping authority. If by such usurped authority, Tucker says, they can demand and take a penny, by the same authority they may take a pound, and even the whole substance of the subject, so as to make him wholly dependent on their pleasure, having nothing that he can call his own. And what is he then but a perfect slave? This is also another message that we've heard over and over and over from the founding generation, from the old revolutionaries, that if you give them an inch, they take a zillion miles. I mean, that's my version of it. The detestable precedent is what John Dickinson called it in response to the Stamp Act, because he knew that some people were saying, oh, this tax is not all that much, so why do we really want to risk our necks for this? And a lot of people do this today. Oh, I don't really care about bump stocks. That's just a kiddie toy. But they don't care about the precedent that it's establishing. Even if it doesn't impact their lives, it impacts other lives. And as soon as you give them the power to do something, you turn a blind eye to do something, you've put chains around your unhappy country, according to Dickinson. And here, John Tucker is saying just a single penny is too much. It's very similar to what Thomas Jefferson, I know those of you guys who watch or listen to me regularly, you've heard me cite Thomas Jefferson, his arguments against the National Bank in 1791, and he specifically said to take a single step beyond the limits of the Constitution is to take a boundless field of power. If you can take a penny, you can take everything. If you take a single step beyond the Constitution, you might as well have taken it all, because you've set the stage for that over time. And I should also mention, since I mentioned Jefferson and I keep mentioning the word slavery, I know some people are probably going to come to this episode and be like, oh yeah, all these hypocrite, horrible people. I thought it was interesting that the founding generation, the old revolutionaries, used this terminology, not just to talk about chattel slavery, which of course many of them did as well, like James Otis, even Thomas Jefferson, who was just a really just interesting in his personal life and the things that he advocated for. But I did an episode over the summer that I thought really had a different take on all that, that I just wanted to mention briefly here. Did Thomas Jefferson write the 13th Amendment? And so many people today won't even pay attention to what Jefferson had to say about the power of government. So if it's supposed to be limited and Jefferson said that, then it must be bad. So government must be unlimited and socialist and garbage. But the drafters of the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery specifically cited Thomas Jefferson, I will link to that one in the show notes. You guys should check that one out if you haven't yet. So summing up this whole kind of view very nicely is John Dickinson, the penman of the American Revolution in 1767 in response to the Townshend Acts. He wrote a series of papers or essays called Letters from a Farmer in Pennsylvania. These were the most widely read documents on American liberty up until publication of Thomas Paine's Common Sense in 1776. And Dickinson covers this whole view of not just arbitrary power, but the taxation and property rights and a little bit more. And this is in his last of his 12 papers. So he's giving the summary of what's next. He said, "Let these truths be indelibly impressed on our minds that we cannot be happy without being free, that we cannot be free without being secure in our property, that we cannot be secure in our property if without our consent, others may, as by right, take it away." So that's kind of the summary of all of that by John Dickinson. And then he goes with this: "Let us take care of our rights, and therein we take care of our prosperity. If you're free, you're going to be more prosperous. But on the other hand, slavery," and this is in all caps, they did all caps, not just in email forwards or fax for whatever the stuff that people have done all caps in more modern times, "slavery is ever preceded by sleep." And he put that in quotes because he knew, and I think he didn't have to say it, but he was citing the celebrated Montesquieu from The Spirit of the Laws in 1748, who in chapter 13, and this is, I think, part one of A Spirit of the Laws, he said, "Slavery is ever preceded by sleep," but not in all caps. "But a people," Montesquieu wrote, "who find no rest in any situation, who continually explore every part and feel nothing but pain, can hardly be lulled to sleep." And in the context of that section, he's basically saying a people who are very awake, who are very attentive, or even obstinate, stubborn, basically, about the power of government and their liberty, stubbornness, really, that's what's needed to keep government power in check. That's what's needed to keep liberty on the march. People who just let things go, who let precedents get established, whether it's based on faction liking one team or another, or because they like the short-term results and they don't think about how someone else with power is going to use that power in the future, that guarantees, to what Montesquieu said, Dickinson cited, and so many others, total tyranny or slavery of the people. Here is Thomas Gordon in his great Discourse of Standing Armies all the way back to 1722, very widely read. He wrote a bunch of the Cato's letters from that time. And Gordon was widely read by the founding generation. And here he said, "There are but two ways in nature to enslave a people and continue that slavery over them. The first is superstition, and the last is force." And really, there's probably a lot of both. John Adams, in his Thoughts on Government, back when he was one of the good guys, April of 1776. Here he is. I guess he sent this over to George Wythe. "Fear is the foundation of most governments." I just put a little asterisk on there and cut off the word "most." But he recognized that fear, maybe this type of superstition that something bad is always going to happen and a superstition that government is always going to save you, that's the foundation of government power. And we have so much of that today. Patrick Henry in the Virginia Ratifying Convention, June 7th, 1788, he said, "It is the fortune of a free people not to be intimidated by imaginary dangers." So he knew also, even though he didn't use the exact same phrase as John Adams did, that fear drives government power. When people are afraid, they beg for help and for safety and protection. And well, Patrick Henry said, "Fear is the passion of slaves." Here's James Otis Jr., January 11th, 1762. "So long as people will submit to arbitrary measures," that's that term arbitrary, government that can just do stuff because government says that they want to do stuff. "So as long as people submit to that, so long will they find masters." And here's Benjamin Franklin's version of this. Not the other word. "To Jane Meacom in November of 1773. I'm sure I got Jane's name wrong, but "make yourselves sheep and the wolves will eat you." And we're talking about sheep and wolves A lot of times we talk about sheep people just following along with what everybody else does. Yes, but also it could be a level of timidity. As long as people turn a blind eye, as long as people live in fear, as long as people just follow the herd, the wolves, the people who want power and control and prestige and money and all that stuff and hate liberty, they will eat us all. Back to James Otis Jr. again, April of 1767, writing as Freeborn American. He points out that, and this is a paraphrase, there is nothing that will destroy liberty. Nothing. The number one thing to James Otis that will destroy liberty is nothing more than a prevailing opinion that it is better tamely to submit than nobly assert and vindicate our privileges. And this is really kind of the point that I was getting to earlier here in the show is that, well, you know, people with power are always going to try to expand that power. But ultimately, as long as people go along with those expansions of power, there's no reason for government to stop doing it. So as Otis was saying, as long as people submit to those arbitrary measures, as Dickinson said, as long as you establish the detestable precedent by complying, for example, with the Stamp Act, as long as you do that, they're going to take that as a new baseline and build upon it and build upon it and build upon it. They weren't saying, hey, we just need to find new rulers to come in and change stuff. They would certainly petition, and Dickinson was very cautious about that approach, but he said, you know, once you've petitioned and you've pushed for things to get changed, they don't respond, then you do noncompliance and you go up more to more active outright resistance and direct action. But certainly it wasn't about just waiting for government to do stop doing things that government was never authorized to do in the first place. If it's always waiting, 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 and just trying to get the right people there, which is what people here in this country in this time have done for generations upon generation, you should never be surprised that that government continually grows no matter who's in power. Now, even if you make progress, as Samuel Adams put it, and we do see some progress, of course, we cover that over at 10thAmendmentCenter.com/report. We'll have an update to our annual State of the Nullification Movement report near the end of this year, and well, we're getting close. So even when you make progress, according to the father of the American Revolution, it's never time to let up until you've already got yourself into the land of the actual free. And here's how he put it, writing as Candidus in the Boston Gazette. This was the publication, really the mouthpiece of the Sons of Liberty, October 1771. Instead of sitting down satisfied with the efforts we have already made, which is the wish of our enemies. And I gotta just highlight that. I know it's highlighted on the image for those of you watching the video here. When you make some progress, sometimes the bad guys will kind of cede a little territory to liberty, recognizing that it's pretty easy to distract a short-term minded population into, oh, well, here's now something else shiny and bad for you to stare at. And then they stop paying attention to this thing. And you just keep distracting them, and the people are so willing to be distracted, and they don't have a focus for the long term. This is exactly what the enemies want. You'll never really make any true progress if you don't have long-term vision and long-term follow-through. As Thomas Jefferson put it to the Reverend Charles Clay in 1790, the ground of liberty is to be gained by inches. It takes time to even convince people of what is for their own good. That's my version of his great letter there. So again, Samuel Adams, instead of sitting down satisfied with the efforts we have already made, which is the wish of our enemies, the necessity of the times more than ever calls for our utmost circumspection, deliberation, fortitude, and perseverance. So I've got some bad news and good news. And there's a lot of bad news if we look around us. I shouldn't laugh, but it's a kind of an uncomfortable chuckle. The bad news to me, the worst news of it all, is that generation upon generation upon generation have basically allowed for, by compliance, by going along to get along, by taking a strategy of, well, we just got to get new bums in there to get things right, or we just got to get a court that's going to do the right thing. Just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for government to stop doing stuff it was never supposed to do in the first place. Well, generation upon generation, this has been the strategy. And many of the other people have basically, well, I think everybody on almost every side, have basically begged for government to do stuff it was never authorized to do in the first place either. So that's the bad news, and I don't see that turning around anytime soon. Here's how George Nicholas put it. This is in the Virginia Ratifying Convention, June of 1788. An enlightened people, and on the image there, if you can see on the screen, enlightened people is really highlighted because that's the caveat. An enlightened people will never suffer what was established for their security to be perverted to an act of tyranny. And if you think about the context of this, Nicholas was arguing in favor of ratification of the Constitution. And he was basically taking the position of like, okay, well, I mean, if you think about the context, okay, we're not going to get everything that everybody wants here, but an enlightened people will never allow this to be twisted and turned into something that can be used for tyranny. So, for example, things like necessary and proper and commerce and general welfare and supremacy, they can't twist that into stuff that is going to allow them arbitrary power because it's an enlightened people. Well, we certainly are not an enlightened people today. Many people just literally beg for destruction of liberty, of their own liberty. Here's Benjamin Rush. Freedom can only exist in the society of knowledge. There's no way to have freedom without wisdom and knowledge. Without learning, men are incapable of knowing their rights. And if they don't know their rights, they're not going to defend them. Jefferson put it this way. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, expects what never was and never will be. So we've got a lot of ignorance. We've got very unenlightened people, even though we're in the age of information. That's the bad news. I don't see that turning around anytime soon, but we have to continue working to set the foundation for the future, for future generations, for, as Samuel Adams put it, the millions and millions yet unborn. But the people do have the power to do the right thing here, so it can be turned around. And to me, that's the long-term vision, the good news. Here's how James Iredell, one of the first Supreme Court justices, put it. This is in the North Carolina Ratifying Convention in 1788. The only resource against usurpation. The only. He wasn't saying a good idea, something to try later, maybe it'll work. The only way to deal with usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. It's always up to the people to keep their own government in check, to protect their own constitution, their own liberty, whether the government wants them to or not. And I know I saw a comment over on one of the platforms the last few days. It's absolutely, especially when the government doesn't want them to do that. Here's how St. George Tucker put it. This is the hopeful vision for the future, the view of the Constitution of the United States. The acquiescence of the people of a state under any usurped authority for any length of time. Think about that. I'm going to pause right there. Some people will tell me, oh, well, it's been so bad for so long. You can't do anything about it now. It's done. Just give up. But if we talk about what James Otis was saying in 1767, there's nothing that guarantees a loss of liberty more than a notion that it is better to tamely submit. So people who take that view, even if it's hard to come up with a way to move things forward for liberty, if you're taking the position that it's over, there's no chance, you're basically contributing to the problem. You're as bad as the people, maybe, who are actually trying to make things worse. Anyways, so even though the people have acquiesced and given up their liberty or allowed usurped authority for any length of time, Tucker continues, it can never deprive them of the right of resuming the sovereign power into their own hands whenever they think fit or are able to do so, since that right is perfectly unalienable, however you want to put that. So the short version is, well, it's ultimately up to the people. The people, doesn't matter if generations before us, our current generation, the next ones, all have done the wrong thing in regard to government and begged for more power and more oppression. Eventually, a generation will come along and say, we're done with this. And that's how Samuel Adams put it again in that great essay in 1771, writing as Candidus. He said, the truth is, all might be free if they valued freedom and defended it as they ought. So we have a 1-2 punch. You're not going to be free if you just get the right people in office. That's not how you get freedom. The people have to value freedom, they have to understand it, and they have to defend it, again, whether the government wants them to or not. Anyways, let me take a look over in the live chat and see if there's any comments or questions I can get back to you. Of course, if you support the show, you want to help us get this message out to more people, Absolutely nothing helps us roll up our sleeves every single day. I don't really have many sleeves today, but nothing helps us roll up our sleeves more than the financial faith and support of our members. You can join us for as little as $2 a month. Throw that dirty fee out our way and we will throw it in their face and do everything we can. As my great friend Tom Woods once put it, no one in the world does more to advance the venerable Jeffersonian tradition of nullification more than us here at the TAC, and your help helps us get that job done. It's 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. There is, Clay Kent, too many Americans are sheeple. And I think that kind of really ties in with Benjamin Franklin's warning. If you make yourselves sheep, the wolves are going to eat you. And the wolves have been feasting for a long time. And the wolves are feasting on the people who think it things just got bad in the last year or two. The wolves are feasting who think that it was just bad from 2016 to 2020. If you just think things are bad based on one team or another, it certainly is a big part of the problem. I love having Samuel Adams in the live chat who... Well, of course, I'm going to cite Samuel Adams all the time. Here's the YouTube version. There is a very thin line between ignorance and malevolence. And I think that's actually an important point. I think a lot of people are ignorant, but a lot of people are willfully ignorant. And then other people are just hands off and just let things get bad because they don't care at all. They don't care. Frank Gilbert says, short of violence, how do we fight this corrupt government today? Well, words certainly don't work. Just telling them to stop doing stuff is the wrong strategy. And you're really going to want to check out, Frank, over 10thAmendmentCenter.com/report. I've got a bunch of episodes that I've actually done on what the strategy is, but it basically is the people and the states have to stop refusing to participate in the enforcement of federal acts and regulatory programs. There's literally tens of thousands of them to choose from, so we're barely scratching the surface. But the more that happens, the more the whole thing comes apart at the seams, and the more that people focus on who's going to be in charge of the largest government in history, the less things are going to change. So I would say 10thAmendmentCenter.com/report is a good place to start. I wish I had off the top of my head a couple of episodes for you to check out, but it is a great question. Haji 1954 says, don't comply, nullify. So again, going back to James Otis Jr., if he's saying there's nothing that will destroy liberty more than a view that it's better to tamely submit than to boldly assert and vindicate our privileges, then you can also think the opposite. What protects liberty? Boldly assert and vindicate your rights, whether or not the government wants you to. We have to start learning how to exercise our rights, no matter what government has to say. Fight them by noncompliance and nullification, says Haji 1954. Is it 54 or 64? 54. Anyways, scrolling through the comments again, see if there's anything else I can get. Comments on Samuel Adams says TAC is one of the best resources for constitutional protection restoration on today's internet. We do our best. I like to think of that as well, but I really appreciate that. Again, I'll scroll through the comments both live and in the archive a little bit later today or tomorrow. I get a lot of great ideas for future episodes from your feedback. Don't forget that membership program, 10thAmendmentCenter.com/members. And even if you're not able to contribute financially, don't sweat it. We're going to keep doing what we're doing, what we've been doing for well over a decade, I guess for 2000. Wow. It's a long time. We're closing in. We're going to be gone 20 years sometime soon here. So we've been doing this a long time. We're going to continue doing it. We just appreciate your help. Even just doing things like leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or smashing the like button, leaving comments, all that stuff actually helps us reach a few more people every time you do it. So I appreciate that as well. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you learned something. I hope your week is off to a great start. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you next time on the path to liberty.